Dr. Mesa, thank you for joining us. Since mid-March, when El Paso health officials reported the first person infected with COVID-19 in the city, there has been over 29,300 confirmed cases reported in the community, and over 550 COVID-19 related deaths have been reported. The city now has over 6,300 active cases that we know of. It's the highest amount of active cases since the pandemic began. What do you think is leading to such a high number of cases right now in El Paso?
My best guess on what can account for this is, number one, one of the things that we have always been concerned about and we don't really know is what percentage of patients or individuals in the population have been exposed and infected that have some immunity. In other words, the number of susceptible individuals in the community is still significant relative to the number of cases that have become infected, that have become diagnosed. And when you have a large population that still has risk for infection, the only thing you need next is a risk factor, a exposure activity that unfortunately I believe has actually been the problem that we have been facing in the last few weeks. So if populations at risk lose that ability to protect themselves from the exposure to COVID-19 virus, the infection will inevitably occur. And I think that's what may be accounting for the number of cases that we see now.
We've seen numbers in New Mexico and El Paso rise since Labor Day weekend. Health officials have largely accounted that, and folks getting together more in public. Businesses have been reopening more in both New Mexico and Texas. Do you think that this is contributing to such a large number of people getting infected?
Yes, I do. You know, you may want to kind of look into as an example is most of the scenarios where people want to control the environment, the so-called bubbles that, you know, in the professional sports been trying to be achieved are basically keeping the number of individuals that interact in a given group of people to a minimum. So if you keep that bubble intact, no new members will come and expose a population that is susceptible. But during the holidays, what you tend to see is actually the opposite. What you have is the bubble is broken. People who have a normal daily routine activity then start to pretty much lose that that integrity of what they've been isolated against, and they start becoming exposed, obviously for reasons not intentional for the most part, but for circumstances related to, as you said, gathering of people who are not usually gathering on the normal daily environment, or going to activities or going to places where they are going to be exposed to individuals that they were not exposed before. And if you unfortunately happen to be exposed to someone that is what they call now the super spreaders, that single individual is going to infect all the population that is going to be exposed to that person. So to me, that's what we are facing every time there is a holiday. And I think that we need to be very careful because the social distancing and the wearing the face mask and the hand washing and all those things, I mean, they work, but they are not 100% protective. So you're still susceptible despite your best efforts on that end.
So with the holiday season just under 2 months away, what do you recommend for folks to try to navigate the holidays to be able to stay free of COVID?
Well, the concept of the bubble makes sense as much as and as long as you keep it within that boundary. And I'm not saying that you're going to live a life of isolation because that is not compatible with our normal human social life, but you have to minimize those exposures. And I still think that, even in people that you are very comfortable interacting with, and if this exposure is going to be unusually high for you, You should be very careful not to engage in activities that are unnecessary. So, for example, Halloween is, you know, coming in a few days, and that's an activity that will be, if you think about it, if it's done without any particular, you know, regard to the risk of infection, can be another potential event that will make the cases to spike. So the question is it essential for you to have an activity such as that? And if it's not, how can you minimize the risk, and how do you have an action plan to avoid getting, you know, that exposure? No, it's very frustrating when we see individuals that just completely disregard the even awareness or the fear that you should have for getting infected with COVID-19. I think that, unfortunately, this is happening with some portion of the population, especially the younger population, because they've been, in a way, I think, in a miscommunication strategy, reassured that if they get sick, they are not going to have a adverse outcome. But the result of that is becoming, unfortunately, the reality that we're living now, with the cases going up. The more patients that get sick, even if it's a small percent of them going into the hospital, the total number of cases in the hospital is going to continue to increase, and that's a problem for us.
Now, speaking of that issue, the governor of Texas recently announced that he is sending personal protective equipment and medical staff to El Paso to help health providers assist them. There are over 350 people currently hospitalized in El Paso. Over 100 are in the ICU right now. Are hospitals in El Paso overwhelmed right now?
We have meetings at the hospital level on almost, not daily basis, but every other day. The census has been very well monitored to maximize the ability to utilize the resources. On the good side, the answer is no, we are not maximizing capacity yet. On the concern side is that the numbers that we have seen in the last few days are going up in a rate that if we don't have a drop in the cases, then it's going to become an issue that both the city as a community and the health department will have to address in a more emergency basis and more critical basis that we have seen so far. And obviously, that's an area of concern to all of us. We would like to, again, curtail this particular spike and increase in the cases as much as we can. But the problem is that there's really nothing that right now will stop it, especially if those people who got exposed, let's say, 10 days ago or 2 weeks ago are coming to the hospital now. It's going to be hard to stop at this point, because whatever intervention we implement now is going to be taking effect later. Still, it's a good idea to act now, but we just need to be very careful not to exceed our capacity. And as you probably can imagine, everyone is very concerned about all these changes that are happening at the speed that is happening in the last few days.
Testing was a major concern for a lot of folks when the pandemic first hit. How do you feel about the testing availability in the city right now compared to earlier in the pandemic? And are more people getting tested now than at the end of the spring, start of summer?
There's more people being tested than before. The problem that I see is that you ideally would like to test all the population at risk, and that is something that is not going to be achieved anytime soon, because the capacity to test is not that capable of doing that. The other thing is that we may need to, and we have to, test more than once the same population. So, for example, you have children that are going to school, you will have to test them periodically. And if you multiply that number times the number of tests that you're going to have to be doing, then the ability and the capacity to test the entire population is going to be fairly limited. I think we're making progress. There's been new technologies being developed that can shorten the time to process a sample to be tested for COVID-19 infection virus. But still, the capacity is not matching the needs of any community at this point.
What age groups right now in El Paso are the highest infected with COVID-19?
of the new cases in the numbers reported are the younger populations, not necessarily the ones, again, that end up in the hospital, but the ones that can potentially be more likely to spread the infection to other groups. So, and that's, again, not actually something that we have not seen before. It's just that we keep seeing it, and it seems that there is no significant impact of prevention that we are achieving with those groups of people.
A lot of news has been made about the possibility of a vaccine being available sometime early next year. What are your thoughts on a vaccine, and if there is one that is tested and approved, how available do you think it will be in El Paso from the moment it is approved?
Yeah, the planning for the vaccine is already in progress. We are already, you know, looking at potential supplies of vaccination coming hopefully sooner than later. I don't think that any particular company that is going to be able to produce a vaccine is going to be able to meet the demands of the population that we want to cover. But on one side, I think that's a problem. On the other side, we know that multiple companies are going to be able to produce the vaccine. And hopefully, once that starts happening, we can target the population at risk. And if the vaccine is as effective, even if it's not 100% effective, but at least what I think the minimum is 50%, I think that we should be creating an impact for the better with providing vaccination to the most susceptible population.
The federal government has largely left it up to the states to set up their own public health restrictions and requirements when it comes to COVID-19. How does it impact us navigating this crisis if every state has different rules and restrictions when it comes to stopping the spread of COVID-19?
I believe the intent of the restrictions or the ability for local governments to select or decide, it has a good intent. The only thing that we need to be careful is that, you know, we still have individuals who not necessarily have the maximum benefit of this, and probably they are affected. They can be affected financially. They can be affected emotionally. So there's always something good and something bad of taking an action. Obviously, the benefit of the population, of the community at large, is what you are really trying to prioritize when you have these measures. The disadvantage of that is that there's been, I think, a message problem that the federal government has been unable to deliver the right information, or the information that is consistently delivered in a way that people believe it. And, you know, persuasion is a very complicated art of making people believe that what they are doing is right. Sometimes we use what we call negative incentives, and usually they don't work for the long run. So we need to be more consistent in the messages. I think people believe the local authorities more than the federal government, if you put the two into perspective. And a consistent message and an open message from the local government, the local health department entities, is what the best strategy will be for any community. I think the local health department has done a very good job in that. They are keeping people informed. They are making decisions that I feel they are for the best interest of our community. But again, the always important proof is that the cases go down. When the cases don't go down, people start to doubt themselves. You start to doubt as a citizen whether, you know, we are doing enough, and we start to blame it on people. And I think that that's the wrong message we want to convey. We want to make sure that people continue to do the right measures to prevent infection, because at the end of the day, that's the only thing that is going to make this curve change, regardless of what we think about it, whether it's a good or bad action.
Dr. Armando Mesa is Chief of Infectious Diseases at Texas Tech Physicians of El Paso. Dr. Mesa, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.